If you've been told to pull up your socks, then make sure it's a pair of TNT socks. The TNT shop is now open at TNTRadio.live. This is the Chris Smith Show on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
G'day, g'day. Welcome to the program. This is the Australian edition of TNT Radio, and it's good to have you on board. It is News Talk Radio coming to you live on just about every video streaming platform on the planet, on the internet. So thank you so much for being part of the program. In this Thursday edition, the mission to triple nuclear power capacity, as was voted on at COP28 last year, well, it's ignited some major projects worldwide that we're now only just hearing about. Today, I want to look at which smart countries are investigating and pressing go on some of the new small modular reactor technology that's available on the market. All, of course, except Australia. We'll get to that off the top. We'll be hearing from the chief libertarian in the state of New South Wales shortly, John Ruddick, MLC. He's got a mountain of issues to tear into, from Israel's quandary over how to hit back at Iran and the biased jury now impaneled for Donald Trump's hush money trial, to Beijing's harsh jab at Australia. They're at it again. And the woke new class subject called Indigenous Mathematics. You heard right. That is no joke, except it is hilariously pathetic. John Ruddick shortly on the program. Former New South Wales detective Evelyn Ray is jumping on for a cameo on the program today. Evelyn will take us through her view of what occurred at the stabbing at the Wakeley Church on Monday evening this week. And the astonishing words coming from the key victim today, Bishop Emmanuel. We'll also discuss pepper spray for women, which you overwhelmingly voted for on our For My Say survey yesterday on the program. And the Queensland school, it'll be the first of many, don't you worry, installing unisex toilets. Yes, the transgender activists have got their way again, just quietly, not making too much of a sound. But if it's in the one of the biggest public schools in Brisbane, you watch it spread. Forget about boys' toilets and girls' toilets. It'll be unisex toilets because, after all, we've got so many transgender kids in our schools right now. All of that with Evelyn Ray. And last but not at least, of course, University of Queensland professor and columnist for The Spectator, James Allen, will be on the program. He's talking today about how woke and left the Liberal Party of Australia has become, and how true is that? See, this is one of the great impediments to the Liberal Party making the Labor government a one-term wonder, because all the Conservatives can't find their party. They don't know where it's gone. They don't know who to vote for. They certainly can't vote for the Labor-light Liberal Party of Australia. It's been taken over. There's no difference between the Australian Liberal Party and the Australian Labor Party. Virtually none at all, apart from a little bit of nuclear campaigning, but that's about it. Plus, we've got you. We've got your views, your opinions. No ceiling on opinion here, and you can dial in from any part of the world. Here are our three numbers from the US or Canada, 1-888-201-6425. You can dial in from the UK, 033-0024-1026, or from Australia or New Zealand, 1-800-670-310. Lots to get to today. Let's get moving. You're with Chris Smith, broadcasting live on the Global News Talk Network, TNT.
It's the stuff.
It's that division
people are talking about.
And that cluelessness that they want to push.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Well, you may have heard my interview earlier this week with Stuart Ballantyne from Sea Transport. He's an advocate for ocean-based small and micro-modular nuclear reactors, technology that operates successfully already in the world.
Indonesia has a number of floating power plants which are gas and diesel propelled. They are now looking at replacing them with nuclear, six of them. Singapore is looking at doing the same. Russia is also doing some of these in Africa. We are the only stupid people in the on the block, right? We just can't get it around our heads. And you ask most people, why are we not doing this? Oh, it's bad for, you know, we could end up fried. It's just nonsense.
I heard an argument from someone the other day about the danger associated with trying to cool the core of a nuclear reactor. And this person thought that he was very, very clever, except the new technology under small modular reactors don't have any vague sense of cooling a core in a reactor. That's 1948 technology. Anyway, since that interview, I have been trolling the internet, collating the various developments in the nuclear sector, because the fact is smart nations around the world are committing to nuclear energy more than at any time in history. The state-run Korea Research Institute of Ships and Ocean Engineering is now developing core technologies for small modular reactor-powered ships and floating SMR power generation platforms. Now, Stuart Ballantyne didn't mention that to us yesterday, but this is precisely what he is involved with. Smart research and development that will clearly reap South Korea amazing benefits in the years ahead. Now, all this hesitancy over nuclear power, which has been around since about 2011, and that, of course, centered around the Fukushima disaster, all of that has now passed. That's well and truly behind us. And nuclear is seen as the reliable power source solar and wind can never be. Go and have a look at uranium stocks around the world, but in particular in Australia, and they are going in one direction, up. This week, Bloomberg reported the Tokyo Electric Power Company will be loading fuel rods into one of the reactors at the Karawa nuclear plant in a complete about-face on nuclear energy in Japan. So they have well and truly moved on from 2011. Now, Kariwa is the world's largest nuclear power plant, the largest, and Japan's nuclear future sounds to be secured. Governments and Wall Street are beginning to realize that nuclear power is the single largest source of reliable, carbon-free electricity, if that's your thing. It's not weather-dependent in particular. The core no longer needs to be water-cooled, and the latest technology even recycles the waste. Now, that, I'm told, is about 20 years ahead, but the first part of that research and development is underway. And get this, from Finland's The National newspaper, the start of Europe's first new plant in 16 years has helped bring down electricity prices by more than 75% in the Nordic country, 75% reduction in power prices. The new OL3 has saved the day for Finland, prevented forecast blackouts as electricity imports from Russia basically dried up. Meanwhile, world leaders attended the first ever nuclear energy summit in Belgium only last month. And it seems as if that after COP28, when 24 nations agreed to triple nuclear energy capacity, the members of the International Atomic Energy Agency have got a pep in their step.
A net zero future needs nuclear power.
The science is clear. If we want to reach net zero carbon emissions,
we can't do it on renewables alone. We need a clean and reliable energy source like nuclear power.
Transformation of the energy sector is crucial to reach our climate targets.
I'm confident that we need also nuclear energy as part of the solution.
Nuclear energy is low carbon, abundant, low priced energy.
Engineering students know it.
Scientists know it.
Radiation experts know it.
The next generation knows it.
World leaders know it.
I know it.
You know it. A net zero future needs nuclear power.
They're pushing the barrow very, very hard. Bear in mind that France has historically invested massively in nuclear power programs. More than 70% of its electricity is derived from nuclear energy, more than 70%. The Czech Republic, Hungary, and Poland are also pushing for nuclear power to be incorporated in the bloc's renewable goals, as they should. The European Parliament was the first to list its investments in gas and nuclear as environmentally sustainable, as it should be. This is what the Greens should be backing in Australia as well. Now, if you're into these farcical net zero targets, Finland will be the flag bearer here, becoming the first developed country in the world to reach net zero by 2035. all because of nuclear. So you can bet it won't happen in Australia because they run under the table when the N word is even mentioned. And if Australia can get into bed with the United States over nuclear submarines, why can't we also piggyback technologically with their restarting of a nuclear plant in Michigan? The government has just thrown $1.5 billion alone towards that project. Why can't we piggyback on that? The fact that Australia is too scared to lift its legal ban on using uranium for power, is it any wonder we won't even form a task force or a large inquiry to keep abreast of what's happening and developing in the nuclear sector? It is daft, it is irresponsible, it will be costly, and it is grossly immature. This is TNT.
TNT's State of the Nation.
So Democrats voted along party lines on the first article of impeachment, which charges Mayorkas with willful and systemic refusal to comply with the law, finding the charge unconstitutional. And there we go. So this DOA on arrival, pretty much as we expected, Timothy.
This is what makes me insane. The Democrats do with impunity what the Republicans will not scruple to do. This is exactly what I said Mitch McConnell needed to do with impeachment 1.0 in early 2020. Don't give it a hearing. Don't give it the time of day. Do not dignify it by holding a trial. It was garbage. This one is real. You know, Mayorkas is clearly systemically not complying with the law. So Democrats get away with not having a trial for a legitimate impeachment, but Republicans hold a trial for an illegitimate impeachment. It makes me nuts.
State of the Nation on today's
the
News Talk.
Britain's far-right conspiracy theory paper spreading hate and vicious lies. No, that's what the BBC say. The Light is the only national newspaper bringing you the real news and informed opinion on what's really going on today. You can subscribe, order copies, submit articles, and read back issues on our website, thelightpaper.co.uk, and see for yourself why the establishment are so worried about the uncensored truth getting out to people every month. The Light Paper. Not far right, just right so far. thelightpaper.co.uk.
The human mind is like a computer. No matter how efficient it may be, its reliability is only as great as the information fed into it.
That's a campaign promise.
Tell us the truth. Tell us the truth.
We mandate that the truth be told.
You're hearing it.
TNT.
Hey, good to have your company. Let's go to our regular Thursday commentator. He is John Ruddick, MLC. He is the leader of the Libertarian Party of the state of New South Wales. John Ruddick, welcome back to TNT.
Good afternoon, Chris. Good to see you, mate.
Good to see you. Well, what an incredible week we've had since we last spoke last Thursday. We'll get to some of the events that have occurred in Australia at least, but I do want to start abroad. I don't know what the US has said to the Israelis, but they might have spooked them because I've never seen the IDF fail to act immediately after they've been attacked, and they usually do so twofold or threefold. The Jerusalem Post reports they have decided how they will avenge the weekend missile and drone assault by Iran. But why hasn't it happened yet? It's bizarre.
Well, I suspect it's because they're planning a big hit and there's a lot of logistics involved. They weren't expecting it. They've probably war gamed a scenario like this for 10 years, but now that it's actually happened. Look, I woke up on Sunday morning, I turned on the TV and I thought, wow, you know, 300 missiles heading from Iran to Israel. I thought, this is pretty bad. But then I saw footage of these drones going over Iraq. Someone on a phone had just taken a foot. And these things were going very, very slow.
Two-stroke engines.
That's right. And I thought to myself, you know, the Iranians are pretty good mates with the Russians. And the Russians have got some hypersonic missiles that can travel, you know, very, very quickly. But the Iranians let the Israelis know that this was coming.
Yeah.
I think they told Turkey, who's part of NATO, who would have told America, who told Israel. So they knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And it wasn't, it was a half-hearted attack.
It was fake. John, it was fake.
Well, they had to do something after the Israelis bombed the Iranian embassy in Damascus. So they had to do something. And then I think it's, Iran talks so tough, but it shows that they are scared of Israel because they said, look, an attack's coming, but it's half-hearted. And you got plenty of warning,
yes.
And you know only one person got injured out of some shrapnel. So, but look, the Sunni part of the Middle East, which is about 70% of the Muslims in the Middle East are Sunni. And the Sunni nations are now either completely neutral in this conflict or pro-Israel. Saudi Arabia helped Israel on the weekend. Massive news. Jordan helped Israel over the weekend. Massive news. The most populous Arab country is Egypt, about 60 million people. They've had a peace deal with Israel since 1979, and through thick and thin, it has held. North Africa is Islamic. They're not getting involved. Turkey's a very big, powerful country. Not getting involved. So, excuse me. So the thing is, what's left now is it's the Shia with Iran at the head who are anti-Israel. Now, the weird thing is this, the first Muslim country to recognize Israel was Iran. I think it was called Persia at the time under the old Shah.
Yeah.
But things have changed. So basically, Israel's long-term position is very strong, the strongest it's actually been since 1948. And now I think that Netanyahu has been wanting to get Iran for 20 years, and he's got a huge opportunity now. But look, it is a long way away. It's a very mountainous country. I suspect that we're going to, it might come tomorrow, it might come in a month, but there is going to be a response. I think they're weighing up, you know, do they hit Iran itself? Do they hit the proxies, the Houthis and the Hezbollah and others? Look, let's just hope it doesn't escalate from there. I don't think it will escalate. I don't think Turkey wants to get involved. I don't think Russia wants to get involved.
I don't think Iran wants to get involved in any kind of world war.
I think Iran is very hopeful that there's a small counterattack and that's it. That's what they're hoping for, because this is what Trump did with Iran twice. Iran bombed the Saudi oil fields in 2019. You know, close ally of America, and the Pentagon was all ready to go and smash them back. And Trump at the last moment said, maybe let's not escalate it. Then a similar thing happened just before COVID in January 2020. Iran launched all these attacks on American bases in Iraq. Again, Trump didn't retaliate. But I think that, I think Netanyahu's different, and I think that they have miscalculated here.
All right, let's get closer to home, but still on a military vein. Labor's doing all it can to at least look like it's flexing its military muscles. We had a $330 billion capital expenditure program and $50 billion in new money announced by the minister yesterday at the National Press Club. Is this a waste of money, John Ruddick, or an investment in preventing aggression and military action?
Well, look, I am concerned about the ever-increasing defence spending in this part of the world and the militarisation of it. Now, China's our number one trading partner. Now, with all these build-ups and alliances and everything else, at some point there's going to be a crisis, and we just don't want to stumble into a war. Now I think that we should be striving for long-term peace in the Asia Pacific, and I think it's very possible. Yeah, it doesn't matter who's in power in Australia. I mean, Australia has never been more pro-America than it has, you know, Julia Gillard, you know, left-wing Labor. Anthony Albanese, left-wing Labor, just an anti-war protesters their whole life. They become the prime minister. I don't know what gets into them, but they love the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
And America's basically treating Australia like it's Pacific aircraft carrier. We're like the big American base here. Now, that's all fine for as long as America remains dominant. America's got a lot of problems, Chris, a lot of bad problems at the moment. And you know, America, it's possible, I hope not, because I love America, but it's possible America's entering into a decline period with all their multiple challenges. And then we're going to be stuck. We're going to be stuck out here as the deputy sheriff. China's going to become, you know, China, this is hypothetical, but China might become more powerful than America. America might get weaker and say, look, we've got to start to withdraw from, you know, being imperial. And then Australia's sort of stuck here, you know. So I really think Australia's got a very important role in the Asia Pacific, and that is, look, we're family with America.
Okay, but you're getting splinters here. Do we keep boosting our defence spend, or do we back off and leave it as it is, which is fairly inadequate?
Okay, well, look, my ideal foreign policy would be this. Non-intervention around the world, but we nuke up. Okay, so that's pretty radical. We say, look, we want to be the Switzerland of the Pacific, which means we will go and sort of help in a humanitarian manner, but we're not going to get involved in foreign wars, because Western intervention usually has good intentions, but it makes things worse, as we saw in Afghanistan, Iraq, Syria, and Libya. So I think in the ideal world, we would declare ourselves the Switzerland of the Pacific. No one invades Switzerland, and Switzerland doesn't have terrorist attacks, okay, because they just don't, they don't go and antagonize people. So we can be the Switzerland of the world, but yeah, we don't. We love Australia. We want Australia to be here another 1,000 years.
Now, I wonder whether the Australian public will contend with any government saying we're going to nuke up.
Well, you're probably right, okay, but I think that they're wrong. Now, I'll give you a good example, okay? The most evil regime in the history of the world, worse than the Nazis, worse than Stalin, is North Korea, okay? They are mongrels, okay? The whole, when the Nazis ruled Germany, if you weren't one of the groups that they were out to kill, which was, you know, 90% of people, they weren't out to kill, you know, the gypsies and the homosexuals and Jews. If you weren't in that category, everything else was, you know, reasonably okay. But in North Korea, everyone lives in this unbelievable hell. Now, the Americans would love to topple that government, but they do not think about it, Chris. They do not think about it one little bit because they got the nukes. Okay. Now, I think we could, we want to defend our magnificent continent. So I think, yeah, you're right. I don't believe it'd be a very popular opinion, but you asked me what I believe. I think our defense spending should be on defense, not attack. And that's what I'm fearful about, where all this money's going.
Okay, Beijing's not impressed with what was announced yesterday. It's taken aim at the Albanese government's inaugural national defence strategy, urging Canberra to drop its Cold War mentality as it denied China posed any risk to regional stability. I wonder whether the military threat from China is overstated and embellished by Australians. John?
Well, I tend to think it is. Now, Australia's not under threat from an invasion from China, okay? The Philippines might be, Vietnam might be, South Korea might be, its immediate neighbours might be, India might be. There's no indication that's happening. Yes, they're muscling up, but there's no indication that they're sort of, you know, an expansionist state, okay? So I think, I know the Chinese are pretty tough cookies, okay, and they are aggressive. I'm aware of that.
They like to rip off our intellectual property. They like to cheat when it comes to international trade agreements. They like to spy on our politicians and impact our politics. But having said all of that, there's a big gap between that and militarily coveting another continent like Australia.
Well, that's exactly right. Okay, so I think we should be trying to sort of foster better relations. In the 1980s, we had a lot of very good world leaders. It was just a coincidence, but you know, we had Reagan and Thatcher, we had Mikhail Gorbachev, we had Deng Xiaoping. And the mood in the 1980s, after 4 decades of the Cold War and hostility, we started to say, well, maybe we can just have a good discussion and become friends. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Reagan and Gorbachev did become friends.
Yeah.
And this is good for the world. Now, I feel like we've got a lot of insecure leaders. And because they're insecure, they have to sort of beat their chest to prove how tough they are. And that's dangerous. Now, Ronald Reagan was as tough as they get, okay? But he was the great, you know, and he did build up the American military. He said, look, don't mess with the Soviets because, you know, we've got better technology than you. So without firing a shot, he won the Cold War. Now, it was the defense build-up, but it was also his personal charm, you know, and convincing people that, you know, we want to have good relations with other people. So I am worried that the military-industrial complex is so hell-bent on saying, you know, Putin's Hitler, the Chinese are Hitler, you know, they're going to invade us. Okay, well, I'm very skeptical of it all. And look, Richard Miles was out there yesterday at the National Press Club. He says, oh, Asia Pacific's the most scary it's been since World War II. Well, that is a load of crap.
Of course, okay, it is a load of crap.
In the 1960s, we had 1 million dead people in Indonesia because of civil war over communism. There was a communist insurgency in Malaya. There was the Vietnam War. There was Cambodia, the killing fields. There was Laos.
Yes.
There was the South Korean War. The Korean War, that was the 50s, but, you know, still bad. We had Vietnam War. Okay, so Richard Miles, now what all those countries today are basically supporting free enterprise and trade and foreign investment, and their students come here and we go over there as tourists, whatever, intermarriage, okay? All these things are good.
Yeah.
Okay, and so he's coming in. He says, oh, it's the scariest it's been, you know, since World War II. Crap. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
He doesn't.
But they want to put us on a permanent war footing. They want us to be freaked out, to think, oh, war is inevitable, war is inevitable. War is always the mistake of bad political decisions. These things can be avoided.
Yeah, that's really interesting that you say that. You know, I don't know where Miles was going with those statements yesterday. I have a feeling that he's trying to justify this massive amount of spending, because the Labor Party also understands that the electorate likes the fact that you are, you know, flexing your muscles and you're showing your toughness and you're prepared to protect them. So I guess they see that as an electoral winner. And so to, you know, try and say and give reason as to why they spend as much as they're planning to spend, they've got to start painting a very bad picture. But I don't see any kind of indication, not one iota of evidence that at some stage in the next 25 to 30 years, China will invade Australia.
No, 100%. If they did have a leader that was, you know, like a Chinese Hitler or a Napoleon that did want to expand, we'd be about the 20th nation on their list.
Yeah, okay? I think so.
And we'd have plenty of warning and we could all unite. I just don't think it's going to happen. Now, we can't be idiots and sit back and say, well, it never, definitely won't happen.
Of course.
We've got to be prepared for it to happen. You know, I think that there is there's a lot more opportunity for goodwill and free trade and basically trying to get along with each other.
Yeah, Lou, one of our listeners or viewers has said on the chat box, John, I would love one example where China interfered in Australian politics, just one. Well, Lou, I can take you back to a report handed to the government by the head of ASIO, Mike Burgess, only 2.5 weeks ago, where he pointed to an intermediary, a former Labor Party politician who tried to introduce a bunch of spies out of China to the Prime Minister's, a former Prime Minister's family member. We presume it is Malcolm Turnbull's son. We don't know for sure. That was one example, Lou. Having said that there's no military takeover of Australia, John, doesn't mean that China doesn't want its mitts in Australian politics.
Oh, yeah, there's no question. I'm sorry to disagree with the listener, but yes, look, China is meddling in our domestic affairs.
Yeah.
Not in a huge way, but they're definitely there. Okay, we probably don't know the full extent of it. Now,
yeah,
if we weren't the deputy sheriff of America, I suspect they'd have a lot less interest in us. Okay, if we were the Switzerland of the Pacific, if we said, look, you know, we're neutral. Okay, and I don't think that they would have this same amount of animosity towards us. That's what I feel confident in.
Very true. Let's take a quick break. I've got to get a news update for our followers. Let's do that right now. Back with John Ruddick, MLC, the New South Wales leader of the Libertarian Party, right after the news break on TNT.
Today's News Talk Radio.
I like hearing the news.
News. A lot of news.
TNT Radio News.
Top of the hour, every hour.
TNT.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. After levelling much of the Gaza Strip, Israel's approved a $5 billion plan to rebuild and strengthen its settlements along the border of the Palestinian territory. The European Commission president was symbolically placed under citizen's arrest on Wednesday for supporting and enabling Israel's genocide in Gaza. And US House Speaker Mike Johnson's defending his plan to split the Senate's foreign aid bill into three separate packages for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan.
We're the pinup boys and poster girls for free speech. We just don't look as impressive as Vladimir Putin shirtless on a horse. Yeah. 24/7, 365. We never stop sifting fact from fiction, misinformation from the truth. From government overreach to the latest on mandates, big tech censorship to propaganda gone mad. Listen to TNT Radio and get the news and views direct from our expert presenters and commentators anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
It is TNT Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in whichever way you can, whether that's just via the audio link or maybe you're watching live from somewhere around the world. I've got John Ruddick with me, MLC from the New South Wales Parliament. I want to talk about Donald Trump's first major trial, if I may, John. This is the hush money trial. It's now got itself a jury, finally. But as Fox News host Jesse Watters explained overnight, there's no such thing as an unbiased jury.
Show me a juror who says they can be unbiased towards Trump, and I'll show you a liar. That's why we don't have political trials in America. Fairness is impossible. Trump's legal team was given the names of potential jurors, and after Googling them, discovered there were undercover activists trying to sneak onto the jury. One juror couldn't recall any anti-Trump feeling, but when the defense showed him the receipts, he admitted he'd posted on social media, quote, "Donald Trump should be locked up."
We would call that in Australia, John Ruddick, a kangaroo court.
Oh, well, absolutely. So there is obviously no more divisive figure in the entire world, let alone America, than Donald Trump. Probably not since Abraham Lincoln, and particularly in New York. And it's in not only New York, it's Manhattan. Mm. And I think Manhattan voted about 92% for Joe Biden. Okay, now they've had to pick these jurors. The good news on this case, though, Chris, is that you only need one out of the 12 jurors to say, I think he's not guilty,
yeah,
and he will be found not guilty. Mm-hmm. So let's just hope that because they're either going to be a Trump supporter or a Trump hater. There's going to be no undecided people here. Jesse Watters is entirely correct about that. So let's just hope that some pro-Trump supporter somehow got through, played the dirty game that the left were clearly trying to do, as you just showed. Now, the whole case, I think it helps Trump. Okay, look, the Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky thing, it helped Bill Clinton in the polls. I know the Republicans thought it was going to bring him down. It backfired big time. And this thing, I think, yeah.
So let's go back there. So if he gets convicted, you don't think it'll make too much difference to his campaign?
I think it'll help him on this trial. I'll tell you why. Right. Because, look, people accept that Donald Trump is Donald Trump. Okay, so he was the biggest celebrity in New York City for three decades.
And a player.
A massive TV star, a good-looking guy, very rich, very sort of, you know, big personality, the mega alpha male. Chicks would throw themselves at him. Now, he doesn't drink. He's not a big party guy, but he likes beautiful women. He used to own Miss Universe pageant. Mm. So he has... unlike the rest of us mortals, he has constantly probably got beautiful women throwing themselves at him. Now Melania, our sympathies are with her. She's had to, this is, you know, she can't be happy about it. But I think that Middle America, if what's left of Middle America, it's very polarized. But I think that there will be, you know, that middle 5 to 10% who potentially can change their vote. They'll think that this is very unfair. This is a private matter. It shouldn't have any impact on whether he's the president or not.
That's interesting. We will see. We will literally see that develop or not develop when we get the polls after the trial is run and done. It'll be interesting to see. All right. Now, I don't know whether this is the ultimate woke washing of the tertiary education sector in Australia, but it's got to get close to it. The Australian National University is now offering a course on Indigenous mathematics because traditional mathematics is too Eurocentric. As Pauline might say, please explain.
Well, mathematics is universal. You could be on the other side of this mighty universe and the same principles apply.
It's numbers.
That's all it is. It's all, now, mathematics is a beautiful thing. The best brains in the world are all over it, which is terrific. A lot smarter than me, but there's no such thing as European maths, as this course is pretending to say, or Aboriginal maths. There's just maths, and it's the same thing everywhere. And look, I think like most, they were an illiterate society. They were a hunter-gatherer society. Now, if you're not a writing society, you can't have mathematics. It's as simple as that. But the ANU, a very prestigious university in Australia, has come out and now offering a course on Aboriginal mathematics.
Okay. What is that? What is it?
Well, I'd love to know.
You don't have a whiteboard, you've got sand to draw in or what?
Well, remember, you know, a lot of these mathematics, you know, there's all this calculus stuff and there's a lot of very complicated stuff, okay? Now, I don't think that the Aboriginal culture contributed to the general knowledge of mathematics. I think that's just a But that's not an attack on them. It's, look, I mean, my ancestors are, you know, English and Scottish, very boring. And, you know, when the Romans turned up there with Julius Caesar about, you know, 2,000 years ago, you know, they were hunter-gatherers, okay? They barely had any towns or villages or anything, a few little huts and stuff. They didn't have mathematics either. Now, they were hostile to the Romans. The Romans won, but the Romans said, hey, you know, let us teach you about our writing skills. Let's teach you about our mathematics skills. And I, as somebody who was an inheritor of that, I say, thanks for coming, Rome. Thanks for telling us how we can improve our lives.
Yeah, I find this, I want to get a copy of the curriculum for Indigenous mathematics. I'm so curious.
Yeah, well, I agree. We should send one of your viewers to go and enroll in this course, Chris.
Yes.
The curriculum will be hilarious.
Yeah, please. One of our viewers, can you please get hold of, what is it, the Australian National University, and sign up. Maybe you can do it remotely. Sign up for the Indigenous Mathematics course and please send us the textbook. I wonder whether there's a single textbook based on Indigenous mathematics anyway.
Yes, well, I'll be fascinated if there is.
Oh, mate, it is the ultimate woke washing of the tertiary education, seriously. One last one. We might spend a little bit of time on this, John Ruddick. We had some vaccine modelling released yesterday, not a vaccine study, but vaccine modelling released by Monash University and RMIT yesterday. The modelling is very important to note. They claim that the COVID jab campaign during the pandemic in Australia saved nearly 18,000 lives in the over 50 demographic in New South Wales alone between August 2021 and July 2022. But as you know, John Ruddick, not all statistical academics agree with what was released yesterday.
Well, you can build a model, and whatever you input into that model, you're going to get the outcome you want, okay? So the people that were the great defenders of the vaccine are now coming out and saying, oh, well, our modelling says, you know, 20,000 people were going to be saved. Okay, there's the people who've got a vested interest in saying that it was a great thing. Well, the vax program is falling apart, okay? I mean, vaccination rates in general have declined significantly around the world because people are now a little bit more sceptical about the pharmaceutical industrial complex. Now I believe that they are wrong with their data, and we know why, because there is a control group. There's the unvaxxed. There's the 3% of us who never took it. Now, are we dying at a higher rate? Well, this is a very interesting story, Chris. New South Wales Health, to their credit, during 2022, maybe a little bit of the other 2021, 2022, they were publishing data every week saying how many people went to hospital in New South Wales last week with COVID, how many went to ICU with COVID, and how many died of COVID. And then they broke it down into people who've had 4 vaccines, 3 vaccines, 2 vaccines, 1 vaccine, and no vaccine. Now, for the first 4 months, it looked, those official statistics looked horrific for the unvaxxed. And they said, you know, there's about a 5 times greater chance of having a serious problem with COVID if you're unvaxxed. Well, then somebody did a freedom of information request, a very intelligent data scientist, Jin Ui, and she said, look, I think how you're getting this data is they were combining the no-vax people with the unknown vax people. So there was a very large number of people presenting at hospitals who the hospital was able to say, we don't know where they're up to with the COVID vax. So they just lumped those people in with the no-vax, which was
so extremely that plumped up their argument.
Absolutely. Now, what happened was everyone in Australia is in the immune, there's some registry in Canberra called the Australian Immunisation Registry. I think that's what it is. And it tells the central authority, any individual in Australia with a Medicare card, how many vaccines they've had for various vaccines, including the COVID vax. Now, a lot of people in that system, they might have an unusual name. They might have the same name as somebody else. A lot of these ethnic names are difficult. You just need misspelling one letter in the middle name for some big long Pakistani name or Bangladeshi name or whatever.
Yeah.
And they come in here and they don't know. So what they said is, the no-vaxxed people shall be grouped in with the unknown category. And what that did is it showed it was looking very bad for the unvaxxed people. This person did this freedom of information, but New South Wales Health was reluctant to do it, but they had to change their records. And they had to create a new category. There was all the different various types of how many vaccines you've had, plus no vax, and then unknown. Now, when they decoupled it, it showed that the unvaxxed people had basically an identical experience to everybody else, which means that the vax didn't work, okay? We've got a big control group, at least 3% of it, didn't take any vaccines, and there's no statistical difference, nothing significant, okay? In fact, the unvaxxed people would basically never went to hospital because they didn't want to go to hospital, okay? Because yep. They were distrustful of the system, right? But the most important category was the fatalities, and the fatalities for the unvaxxed is basically perfectly in line with the other categories. So the vaccine didn't work. The vaccine industrial complex is very well aware of that. All the claims they made have proven to be false. And so now they come out with this garbage modelling and say, oh, well, and some idiots out there will believe it, Chris. But most people know people who've been injured by a vaccine. Most people know people, multiple people who have been, I'm not saying they're dead, but I know half a dozen of my mates, usually fit males who like a bit of sport, heart problems, okay? Now, a lot of it seems to be going away, thank God for that. But, I mean, it seems like a very unusual vaccine where it's meant to get rid of a flu-like virus and it ends up stuffing up your heart. And they admit it does bring about myocarditis. Now, they dispute how much there is, but, I mean, anecdotally, it seems to be a lot more people than they admit.
Well, that New Zealand study, which looked at 199 million health cases, said that in many, many instances, it was observed three times more than what was expected.
Right. Yes. Yeah, well, there you go. So it's the mRNA. The COVID shot was not your annual flu shot, okay, which, you know, has been around for a while. And this was a whole new type of vaccine, okay? It never been tried before. What could go wrong? This is why I never took it. I thought the COVID, I remember saying at the beginning, I remember thinking there's a 90% chance the COVID vaccine will work.
Yeah.
I thought there's a 5% chance it'll just be neutral. But there's a 5% chance it's going to backfire. Yeah. I thought it's a 5% chance because there was so much hoopla and it was so political.
Okay, so quick.
It was all weird. It was something was wrong. And I just thought, and it was left wing. It was driven by the bloody left. And they tend to get things wrong. Mm. And I just thought, look, it's totally possible here. They could really stuff things up here. Now, it hasn't been that bad, the vaccine injury, so far. Let's hope that they... the rise in excess deaths, let's hope it starts to sort of come down at some point. It's a worry that it hasn't yet. I reject what that modelling has said. I can't believe it's true. They're not interested in the truth. They're interested in propaganda.
Yeah. Can I just refer my viewers onto the X account of Professor Andrew Timming? Mm. Andrew Timming is from Melbourne, and he does not agree with the modelling, primarily because it is modelling and it's not statistical evidence. He talks about that, and you can have a look at what he says. Could I just add a topic that Craig Kelly has broached on social media this afternoon that I thought you'd be interested in? He's got some new ABS data on the monthly migration intake, and it says that the monthly migration intake has exceeded 100,000 people for the very first time in Australian history. He says Albanese and Labor are destroying Australia. From the end of World War II to the Sydney Olympics, the annual average net increase of new migrants was 80,000 a year. In the first year of the Albanese regime, net migration was over 500,000, and Labor promised this turbo migration was just temporary. However, data just released by the ABS shows that net permanent and long-term arrivals in February of this year were at a record monthly high of 105,460. That is not good for this country, John Ruddick.
What's happening here is the politicians have got it in their head that if we go into recession, they'll probably lose an election. So their number one thing in life is to get that GDP figure out of a recession.
Yeah.
And the best way, the simplest way to do that is just to let a ton of people in here, and that means that the gross domestic product will sort of keep up a bit. Okay?
That is exactly a great reading of why they're doing what they're doing.
Yeah, that's all it is. And you know, as soon as COVID was over, Dominic Perrottet, he's the state premier at the time, he comes out and he says, oh, we're going to have a massive influx of migrants. I thought, well, why is that? Why do we need all those migrants? And it's to keep the GDP up, okay? So they can say, oh, we haven't had a recession. The truth is we have been in a recession for about a year and a half, Chris.
Yeah.
A per capita recession, which is the real figure, okay? And it's showing that, you know, we are, you know, there might be more people, the pie might be bigger, but there's a lot more people eating the pie. So there's actually less piece of pie for the average Aussie. That's what's happening. Now, look, in terms of what's the ideal immigration program? We should have it so that businesses, if they desperately need someone who's got a particular skill set, the business should sponsor them to come out here.
But okay? That sounds like an intelligent immigration system, John yes. Ruddick. You're kidding, aren't you?
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, yeah. And there should be like a free market where we could, and people will say, "Oh, I'm prepared to bid this amount for I need to get this person who's got this particular set of skill." And the left all around the world think that by bringing in all these migrants that they'll typically vote for the left-wing party. Now that has been the case in the past, but the more the left wants to talk about transgender stuff and you know all the woke stuff, okay, and Australia was invaded. Most of these migrants come out here and they love Australia, okay? Mm. Then they think, oh, my God, it's heaven, it's paradise, okay? Mm. They don't want to come out here and have their kids told, oh, it was founded by invasion, which, of course, is BS anyway. Mm. Most of these migrants that come out here, Chris, are very socially conservative. Most of them don't want welfare. I know a lot do. We don't want them ones. There's nothing worse than an economic migrant, like a welfare migrant. I mean, that's just self-inflicted harm. Mm. Okay, but if you've got someone who's entrepreneurial, or they've got some great skill, a lot of migrants do add to Australia. So, but we've just got to be, we're in this magnificent position, Chris, where there's about 3 billion people around the world right now, probably half the world's population, would cut off their right arm if they could get an Australian permanent residency visa. So that's fantastic. So what I'm saying is let's select the best.
Yeah.
Let's be very aggressive about it.
Couldn't
and select
more.
The best.
Do it intelligently. Maybe that's something a little bit beyond the current federal government. I'll let you go. Fantastic to have you on the program, John. Thank you very much for your time.
Good on you, Chris. Good to see you, mate. See you next week.
Good on you. John Ruddick, MLC, the leader of the New South Wales Libertarian Party. Great to have him on. Each and every Thursday on the program, let's go to a break right here at TNT.
Here's a bushfire fact. Bushfires can occur without warning. So if you're travelling during bushfire season, here are three simple steps to remember. 1. Check the fire danger rating before you go. The higher the fire danger rating, the more dangerous the conditions. It may be safer to replan your trip. 2. Think about the area you're going to and what you would do if a fire started. How would you escape the area if you needed to? And where would you go? Check if there's a neighbourhood safer place. 3. It's dangerous to drive through smoke or fire. If you can't find a way to avoid the fire, park in a cleared area, face the car towards the fire, and turn the engine off. Then lie on the floor and cover yourself to protect yourself from radiant heat. Live bushfire ready. For more helpful tips, visit myfireplan.com.au today.
Even the mighty might not see it coming. It's pre-diabetes, and it captures 1 in 3 adults. But you can escape. Take the 1-minute pre-diabetes risk test to know where you stand and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. Be your own hero on smartphones everywhere at doihaveprediabetes.org.
The voice of a changing world, Chris Smith, on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
I spoke at length yesterday on the program about censorship and what the eSafety Commissioner seems to be doing with the social media giants. Now, from what I have been able to glean from various statements made by X to their account holders, they don't intend taking down anyone's distribution of real events that occurred at Bondi Junction on Saturday or what occurred at Wakeley on Monday night. there doesn't seem to be an effort to do so. Now, I might be wrong. It might have happened and we haven't seen it, because if you can't see it, you don't know whether it was there or not. But I get the feeling from the notes that have been sent to those that have been warned individually, I get the feeling that they are not budging. So where is the E-Safety Commissioner now? Is she going to do something about it? Is she going to fine these individuals, these big tech giants? And are they going to give us stuff? I doubt whether they will. But it's just another area in which the Australian government, at least, is trying to control us, to put us under an umbrella, to make sure that we only speak their speak and follow the mantra of 1984 as written beautifully by George Orwell. In other words, the government is the government and their narrative is the only narrative. Well, here's another example, and it's digital IDs. Digital IDs. There are a series of protest rallies going on, not this weekend, but the weekend next. I think it's Sunday, the 5th of May, to protest against the passing of digital IDs through the Senate 2 weeks ago. I think it's an outstanding event to go along to, and I implore you to attend in your capital city. But this is interesting. This is about what happens when digital IDs are allegedly voluntary. And as I've said 1,000 times to individual politicians and others who I've spoken to on the program about digital IDs, voluntary may be what the rule says, but in practice, it will be compulsory. If you want to be part of a particular system or rollout, you've got to have yourself a digital ID. So it pressures people to be part of the control program. Have a listen to this. New South Wales, according to Computer Daily News, is offering digital birth certificates as part of an Australia First trial. I wonder who's behind this. Was it New South Wales, or was it the feds, the bureaucrats associated with digital IDs, just to test the waters? The trial will determine whether the service will see a wider rollout on digital identity systems. Here we go again. Identity systems, not just the birth certificate, other systems which need to be digitally conglomerated or gathered in one location, deployed by both the New South Wales and federal governments. They are so into this, it's not funny. They want your information in a bank where they can control you. The digital birth certificate pilot is open to parents of more than 18,000 children enrolled in the New South Wales education system. The digital birth certificate will have similar security features to the digital driver's license and photo card, including a hologram, timestamp, and identity proofing features. The state government says the introduction of the digital birth certificate opens opportunities for it to be used to help register a child in junior sport. So if you're playing sport, it's not a matter of turning up with your $50 and getting your socks and turning up and playing football the next day. Oh no, you're going to be registered with the government, the New South Wales government, according to this, under junior sport. And you'll get a unique student identifier number as well. You're going to have, as a child, an identifier number. You are going to be known as by the government as number 648 or 6048. The technology is being delivered by the New South Wales Registry of Births, Deaths and Marriages, supported by the Department of Customer Service. But who's behind it? The big federal government boogeyman. Of course, they are ready and raring to go with the rollout of digital IDs because they want all that information so other departments can look into it, can access it, and do what they do with your information. They want to know where you go to church. They want to know what money you've got. They want to know how to stop the money if you're not doing the right thing by your country. That's how it'll work. And they can say until they're blue in the face that this is voluntary. But look at this. If you want a digital version of a birth certificate and you don't want to run around with a hard copy, you've got to be part of the system. And I must admit, I always liked the hard copy of the birth certificate. My mother used to put it in a frame and put it in the hallway. I thought it was rather cool. So I won't ever want a digital birth certificate. I do have a digital photo license, but I don't want a digital birth certificate. I'd like the hard copy. So I just thought I'd tell you that, because that is another classic example of what happens when they round us all up and they intend to put us all in a big bank, a digital identification bank. Now, it's interesting. The east coast of Australia during the summer period had plenty of rain. We've had rain in January, February and March as well. It's raining today outside in Sydney. But that's not the same for WA. And in some areas of WA, they are going through some severe drought conditions. And I noticed on X today, some of those farmers sending various messages. There is a video on Kaluka Farms account on X showing lots and lots of very undernourished sheep, newly shorn by the look at them, and they would have been over the summer period. But they're in this very, very dry and desolate paddock. And it says, it is such very hard times for sheep farmers in Western Australia. It's been a very teary day for me. I started organising a neighbour to dig a pit big enough to put 3,000 plus sheep in. This video shows our beautiful lambs. I can't cope with the thought of shooting them. There are simply no buyers. 3,000 in a gigantic pit is the story of drought in WA. Back after the news.